This is Fresh Air. There's just a little over 2 weeks left to file your income tax. The only thing more confusing than our tax code is figuring out why on earth it's so confusing. Investigative reporters Donald Bartlett and James Steele have some answers in their new book, America, Who Really Pays the Taxes? They're also the authors of the bestseller, America, What Went Wrong? About the Disappearing Middle Class. Bartlett and Steele's new book analyzes the inequities of our tax system. Yesterday, we talked about how the tax burden has been shifted from the wealthiest to the middle class. Bartlett and Steele say the tax burden is also being shifted in the business world, from the largest corporations to smaller ones.
There's an absolute shift there, and it's a very dramatic one and a very steady one that goes back really 40 years, starts 40 years ago. But it's accelerated dramatically in recent years. You go back to the 50s. Think of the income taxes, all of them, corporate and individual, as a big pie. Back in the 1950s, corporations paid roughly 39% of that pie. By the 80s, they were down to 18%. This is what the corporate share had declined to. That meant individuals, from middle-income people to the very wealthy, everybody on that side of the ledger had to make up the rest of that. What accounts for this shrinking percentage? The significance of this to us is that you hear so much about how corporate America is paying so much, how its tax burden is very high. That very often is true with some small businesses, by the way. But with the overall, the larger corporation, it's quite often not the situation. What accounts for this? And we looked into this. In addition to a number of the write-offs that have been part of the tax code for a long time, one of the most dramatic reasons why some companies are paying less today than they did in the past is that they are simply paying more to foreign governments than their own. Corporations that once paid more to the U.S., and less abroad, it's now a reverse situation.
This is the multinationals you're talking
Multinational.
About?
Multinational. I mean, Coca-Cola is an example. There's 7 out of 10 of Coca-Cola's income tax dollars go abroad. Only three
you
of those 10
You
stay
can look
here.
At a company like Black & Decker, which is a familiar name to everybody. From the period 1990 to 92 we looked at, 4% of their money was paid in U.S. income tax. 96% went to foreign governments. Exxon, 23% to the U.S., all the rest to foreign governments. Ford Motor Company, 40% U.S., 60% foreign governments. Now, the argument obviously is going to be, well, that's where their sales are. Their sales are outside the United States, which is fine, and they should pay those taxes. The problem is the tax code has not been changed to take into account this shifting of tax revenue, and we're still operating under a tax code that was written at a time when corporations paid the largest percentage of their taxes in this country. And this is further complicated by the fact that foreign-owned companies doing business in the U.S. pay taxes at a much lower rate than U.S. companies.
If multinationals are paying more to foreign governments than they are to ours, is that because they're doing more business abroad? And would the solution to be to try to keep them doing more business here? Or is the solution tax incentives to stay?
Well, that's an interesting question. Part of it is that they are indeed manufacturing overseas and shipping products from their overseas locations. It's an area that really needs to be studied.
We're not advocating restricting their ability to do that. That's not the point. I think what we're saying is that there are a whole series of things available to a multinational that is not available to basically a U.S.-based company. One of those is this issue of transfer pricing. You can adjust your books to deal with your best of all possible tax situations. The other irony is that many foreign companies simply have a higher, or countries have a higher tax rate than we do, which is ironic when you view this debate about U.S. corporate taxes being so high. We obviously can't control that, but it needs to be said in light of the notion that we're paying, that corporations are paying so much here.
And what's significant about that, in those cases, that means U.S. taxpayers are indirectly subsidizing the taxes of foreign governments.
Isn't this something we're just stuck with in the global economy?
No. This is this buzz phrase of the 1990s that we've heard so much about it. Everything is just dismissed, well, that's the global economy and that's what we have to do. But this clearly is not true. Just as there is no reason for inequities in the individual side of the tax code, there is no reason for inequities in the corporate side of the tax code. Once again, these are the people with the greatest access to Congress who are going to get the tax laws written in the way they want them and not in the way that serve the best interest of the country at large or of business at large for that matter. Because as Jim indicated, small businesses and medium-sized businesses do not have these options. They are stuck with the taxes they pay, whereas with the multinationals, taxes are often optional as to where they pay them or how they pay them.
Conversely, every time you see in this country an attempt to tax foreign corporations operating here so that they might pay comparable rates to what a similar U.S. corporation would pay here, there's a hue and cry, like this will frighten off business, this will frighten off foreign investment. But the net result of it is even those companies are not paying here what U.S. corporations, both domestic and of a multinational sort, pay.
Many of these foreign-owned companies doing business in the U.S. pay taxes well below the rate of a middle-income family.
My guests are Donald Bartlett and James Steele, investigative reporters with the Philadelphia Inquirer and co-authors of the new book, America, Who Really Pays the Taxes? We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about inequities in our tax system with Donald Bartlett and James Steele. And going back to the theme that the tax burden has shifted, you say another example is that it shifted from the federal government to the state and local governments. State and local governments have to raise more revenue to compensate.
This is right. And this is a combination of things. Many programs that the federal government once took on, they've shifted to the states, and they've told states and local jurisdictions, now you pay for these. The bottom line on all of this, though, and this is a great point, and this is why there's so much frustration over taxes. It's not just at the federal level. It's the combination of what people are paying at the federal level and the state and local level, because state and local taxes have been going up at a much sharper rate than federal taxes. And the reason for that is because so many of these things have been shifted to the local level. And what's happened is, and this is why the middle income group is being hit so hard, because state and local taxes everywhere are very regressive, meaning they weigh hardest on middle income, lower income people. The federal system, for all its imperfections, has some degrees of progressivity in it even now, not like it did a few years ago, but compared to most states, I mean, it's a model of equity, because most states, even states that have income taxes, and many of them, Pennsylvania, of course, is one example of one that has a flat tax. Many other states have graduated rates, but you reach the top rate very quickly, $8,000, $9,000, $15,000. In other words, somebody who is a fast food worker in a state like Missouri is paying almost the same rate that somebody like an August Bush is paying, the Anheuser-Busch family, because that rate is approached so quickly. And that is the story in many states that have income taxes. They are not true income taxes. They're, in effect, flat taxes that weigh heavily on middle-income people.
And, you know, we're not sure that people understand sometimes also just how regressive a sales tax is. If you use as an example a family with an income of $30,000 a year buys a Ford Escort for $10,000, that family has paid 2% of its income in state sales tax. But a family with $1 million in income buys a Continental and it pays 0.2%. The middle-income family has contributed 8 times as much of its income to the support of state government as the wealthier family has. And people tend not to think about that when you're talking in terms of sales tax. But if you were to put that ratio into an income tax and say, here's what we're going to do for you as a family with making $30,000, you're going to be taxed at a rate of 9% on your income, and if you make $1 million, you're going to be taxed at 1%. How many people would buy that? But yet that's what a sales tax does.
States and cities, I think, are in some ways competing with each other to see who can have the lowest corporate taxes so that they can help use that to woo businesses to move there. And places are desperate now to bring in companies, both for the tax dollars that the companies will pay and also for the jobs it's going to generate. So what kind of havoc is that creating, this competition to woo companies through taxes?
This is a form of, you might say, tax roulette when the gun is aimed right at the American middle class. And this is another step in this process. This is going on everywhere. For a long time, states have competed against each other, particularly southern states have been trying to lure plants from the North for years and years for a whole range of reasons. So there's nothing on its face exactly new about the process. But what's happened is the whole thing has escalated way beyond what it was just a few years ago. Now you see, even within metropolitan areas, a tremendous amount of competition for suburban areas trying to lure institutions out of a city. You find even within a state, one county vying with another. You find within regions, one state vying with another to get a plant. When you look at every one of those individual situations, you say, well, what's a governor to do, or what's a mayor to do to deal with this process? And the fact of the matter is most of them have a gun pointed at their head. There's not a whole lot they can do or they feel they'll get blamed. But the bottom line of it means this continuing, ongoing shifting of the tax obligation in those jurisdictions to medium-income families.
There's a proposal that a subcommittee passed that cigarette packages, each pack of cigarettes should be taxed $1.25, which is it's a hefty tax.
Sure.
Now, I know we're all against smoking, and smokers are exiles now from their homes and offices. But what do you think of a tax like that from the perspective of fairness?
Well, if the idea is to make people stop smoking, then what happens when they all stop smoking? What happens to that tax base? It just strikes us as not a very secure tax base.
We also think that this is an illustration of, and your point on fairness I think is very good, but it's also an illustration why we're still in this mode where we really don't want to talk about taxes at all. So you want to pick out something over here that's on the fringe that affects a few people. And while there is a big, powerful lobby in the tobacco industry and so forth, essentially the people involved is getting smaller and smaller each year, as opposed to doing something across the board with the income tax, which is still the fairest and most equitable way to raise money overall, assuming you have progressive graduated rates. We're doing everything in this country to avoid looking at the income tax, because nobody likes to pay taxes, and we're all in sympathy with that problem. I mean, everybody agrees with it, but it's still, in many ways, the fairest of all taxes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you are particularly paranoid people or not, but it wouldn't take much paranoia, because this is the way people think about auditing, for you to think, well, now that you've tried to investigate the tax system, surely you're going to be audited. A lot of people see auditing as a punishment for doing something that might be perceived as threatening to the tax system or to the government or whatever. Is there any truth in that? And do you think you'd be audited for writing your book?
No. I think also this is a book really, it's aimed at Congress, not IRS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, IRS, and we've written about IRS over the years. I mean, one of our early series was about IRS. And IRS is an easy target because much of what they do, they are told to do by Congress. And the real culprit here is Congress. It is not IRS.
I mean, the complexity that we are all angry about is a result of the tax legislation derby on Capitol Hill. IRS must live with that legacy. So we don't view them as the principal problem there.
Is there ever retribution behind the decision to audit somebody?
Well, I'm sure in probably some cases there may be. And you know, we've run across cases of that sort. But again, at the heart of it, though, is this complexity. And that's where you see, even with IRS, operates at a certain disadvantage. Half the time, you cannot tell what the law means and intends. And in fact, when the laws are passed, then Treasury and IRS have to get together to issue regulations. Sometimes these projects take years to complete because they debate what Congress intended and what should be the final word of the law. So this gets to the heart of this complexity of the system.
What makes this complexity work for Congress is, you can think of it as a bank. Whenever they need money, all they've got to do is propose a tax rule change, and millions of dollars will pour into the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee and campaign contributions and speakers' fees. I mean, the money just floods into Washington. And that's probably the overriding reason that Congress will not enact a simplified tax law. It is money in the bank. The complex law is money in the bank.
So you are not worried about being audited?
No.
No.
Have you done your tax returns yet?
working on it mightily.
Can we talk about your next subject here?
Any final words you have for our listeners who are still facing filling out their taxes and have to brace themselves for the bills that they're about to pay?
Well, I think when they fill out that tax form and they get to some of the various forms that are complex, that are difficult mm-hmm. to navigate their way through, I think they should realize that it's not them. It's not some deficiency on their part. I mean, this is the way the system has been designed. And it doesn't have to be this way. And they will be maddest, angriest at IRS because of that, because they're looking at the IRS form. But again, it is a product of a system created largely by Congress, by a number of administrations that IRS and all of us must live with. I don't think I'm sure IRS would love to have that thing simplified for a whole range of reasons. And I know the rest of us would. So when they do that, realize there is a way around that. And the next time they hear a congressman or a senator say, we want to simplify the tax code, go turn to their last year's tax return to just see how well they've done it in the past.
And when they get to line 53, which says, this is your total tax, don't be mad at IRS, be mad at Congress. If you make more than, say you make $45,000 and you pay more than $263, you're paying at a higher tax rate than a wealthy investor in Kuwait who gets all of his money from his U.S. investments. Actually, if you make $25,000 a year and pay more than $15 in income tax, you are paying at a higher rate than an investor in the United Arab Emirates who invests in the United States. And that's courtesy of Congress.
And that's to encourage foreign investment?
It's to take care of people.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Donald Bartlett and James Steele are investigative reporters with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Their new book is called America, Who Really Pays the Taxes? This is Fresh Air.